Good morning. Today is Wednesday, November the 24th. Joining us this morning from Old Growth Cellars, Jimmy Pastore. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
You having fun yet?
Yeah, we are. Everything's in barrel, done. So we're just into the Christmas spirit now.
Oh, I see. This is when you just kind of kick back and pretend you're rich and famous and all that kind of stuff.
Well, we're
drive up
wealthy,
and down the road in St. Helena.
We're wealthy in wine.
Fair enough. Are you ready for your question this morning?
Yes.
All right. Why are golf courses called golf links?
I'm not sure because they're on. I'm not sure.
The word link comes from the Anglo-Saxon word meaning slope.
Yeah.
Since the earliest golf courses were situated on grassy slopes, that is, gentle rolling land, they were often called golf links.
Yeah.
There you go. And then there's golf ponds.
Yeah.
You know about those more than you do about links, right?
Yeah. And it started probably with a cow pasture.
Yeah. No kidding. Oh, what kind of year was it for the wine industry this year with all the smoke in the air and all that kind of stuff?
It was challenging again. Of course, we didn't do as much wine. Certain vineyards that we had were smoke tainted. So without testing, you really can't tell taint until after the wine's made. So you take an educated guess and you just say, we're not buying.
Kind of tough for those guys. Now, were they, now that you're through your initial press, can you get those grapes and try one and just see a small
batch?
No,
or
are they gone? They're
gone. Most of those are dropped, or most of them have crop insurance. Those guys do, or a big company like Gallo who has the machinery to do osmosis and can buy that stuff pennies on the dollar, can make it into something.
Oh, so they'll have some kind of a special formula for 21.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It's called Two-Buck Chuck.
Yeah. Well, that's why, with all this various opportunities and chemicals and additives, it's kind of surprising that there wouldn't be something you could either balance it with or that would make that kind of a more palatable. It might take a long time to get to that point.
Yeah, like I said, they have a machinery that can do that. It's very expensive, so.
Yeah, very, very expensive.
Yeah,
okay. So what do you guys have to do, or what you and others, you buy further south? Did you buy from Oregon? Where'd you go?
No, there was so much wine and tank that a lot of people bought the stuff that was left over from last year. So all those people sort of got their stuff that was in tank that people hold. And bought that and probably made wine with it. We looked into that, but it wasn't available for us. You're looking for a certain quality, and sometimes that really is, you can't find it when you're buying bulk wine.
Okay, so you just maybe lower your expectations?
Yeah.
As a consumer, not necessarily as the producer.
Both. Yeah, because you have a quality you're looking for, and when you work with the same grapes for so many years, you know what you're going to get. It's always a little crapshoot when you're. But the business is, as you know, it's well connected. So we call different people, and you can get samples. So,
isn't it part of the fun and the mystique and the challenge to make it a little bit different each year? Or do you strive for consistency?
They are different each year. I mean, our blends are different. I brought in a Symphony, a Riesling, and a Chardonnay, and blended them all because they weren't the quality I wanted. And we can throw some little Muscat or put a little stuff in there to sweeten them up. And that's when some of the winemaking is fun, when you're getting to be a chemist.
Craft of it.
Playing with it, different stuff, trying to make it something palatable.
So when you're doing that, how do you test it to know where you are?
We got to drink a lot.
Having it rest and some of those things that you do before and the consumer end see it. How do you mimic that?
We do a lot of bench trials, so we'll take the small little tubes and start mixing everything and put them out there and start doing blends.
Now, are you using the equivalent of like litmus paper and doing the real chemical stuff, or do you rely on your palate?
More than a palate.
Okay.
Yeah. You figure all your chemistry is done before your pHs and what you think you're going to do, and then after that, you find that sweet spot you want with your acidity and your pH, and then after that, we'll start doing the blends. And it does change it, so you got to go back and taste it again.
Same process for red as it is for white?
Red's a year and a half. Or whites, they sort of call it the cash cow. Some of them, 3 months, you can get them in, get them out. Our Chardonnay, we do barrel it for a year because we put brand new oak on it. Something we're trying to get more rich and creamy and a little more complexity.
But as far as the manufacturing side of it, doing the testing and the blending, is the process the same? It's just different,
yeah.
Just different grapes?
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned putting them in the barrel, so to speak.
Yeah.
How much does the wood influence the taste?
The wood, to me, is in the wine business, is huge. We take pretty much pride in our barrels. So it's just, put it this way, it's like cooking. They all throw different spices.
That much influence?
Yeah.
Huh.
And after the third or fourth year, those barrels are neutral, so they're not throwing as much wood as they would. They go down almost two-thirds in price after the first year.
Oh, really? That's when they become garden, nursery,
well, about
stores?
About the fourth year,
they're
garden.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I would have thought, like they do with barbecue, you throw in some chunks of wood and just let it float inside the barrel for a while.
Oh, you can do that. You can buy that.
Is that cheating?
No, it's called wood staves. And I just found, for me personally, in making a wine, it doesn't throw the same consistency of flavor I want.
Well, your surface is probably less.
Yeah, but this, I found it doesn't work for me. I like buying the brand new barrels.
Where do they make those things?
There's about four or five different cooperages in Napa. We have some barrels. I have some barrels I just picked up in Oak and Demtoast, and they've been out in the ocean for the last 6 months.
Barge?
Yeah.
Not just floating.
They came from Hungary.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So not necessarily.
So there's certain barrels I use for different wines. So Hungarian barrels, I found it throws more on my Barbera.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Join Warren Eckstein on KINS in the 6 o'clock hour as he explains pet behaviors, different fun facts, tips, and all sorts of info about your animals and the way they think and act.
Here are just some of the things that kids learn when they have pets in their life.
If you're an animal lover, this is absolutely the program you need to hear.
You know, vocalizations are a very important part of animal communication and their language. Hi, this is Warren Eckstein. Hear my daily pet tip weekdays on KINS FM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Jim Pastore from Old Growth Cellars. Jerry, the barrels themselves, you'd said some of the international stuff will do this, and some of the domestic stuff will do that. On the scale, is it like 1% difference, 0.5%? I mean, can you really tell the difference, or is it more like the essence rather than the grape and the wine itself?
I mean, you can tell the difference. I can, between what they throw. The French oak throws, like I was telling you, a little more vanilla, where American oak throws a little more maybe spicy, peppery. And vanilla seems like just a softer mouthfeel.
And different species?
Oh, yeah.
We'll do the same? I mean, that kind of makes sense. I mean, if you smell like a fresh-cut Madrone or a pine, okay, there's a difference.
Yeah.
There, but for the barrels also?
And how they're aged. Most of them are 3 years old. Four-year-old, you'll get less tannins. How they toast them, it all changes in the barrel. So we work with a lot of little American, and majority now we're sort of going to French oak.
So how they burn the wood? I guess. I mean, toast sounds more food, but I mean, how much flame they expose it to, or how little they do.
Yeah, how many minutes are on there, how hot it is.
So it's now. Will they scrub that down?
No,
or is the charcoal or the ash or whatever
charcoal stays on there?
That's part of the magic that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Somewhere back in the vast recesses, tannin, and which basically is grape skin, right?
Yeah, tannins. Yeah.
Okay.
Or you'll get it from the jacks. We'll get tannins.
Okay. So with that, I would suspect that there must be some deviation or variation in the thickness of the grape skin also.
Yeah, every varietal has its different varietal has less skin, depth of skin.
And the soils?
Soils is huge. That's why Napa Valley's Napa Valley.
Right. Okay. So you've got these variables that have nothing to do with the fruit itself.
Yeah.
Do you make allowances for that, or do you?
I always tell people wine's made in the ground. That's above the ground. We're just trying to make sure we don't screw it up. You find people that grow good grapes, you're going to have a lot better chance of making good wine.
Yeah, I would suspect it's kind of like the pig in the lipstick thing.
Yeah.
You can't do a heck of a lot. Yeah. When you go to tasting rooms,
mm-hmm.
Okay, so you don't really, hopefully they're blind. So you don't know what you're tasting?
No. What I'll do is, just because when I go to tasting rooms, I'm usually going to areas looking for different grapes. But what I will do is I'll bring stuff back and compare it to mine, and I'll brown bag it with my employees. So we're taste. Because, you sort of get, I call it winemaker's palate. You sort of get used to drinking your own wine. So it's like, all right, let's try somebody else's and see what we're doing, what's different, and especially the wines around the same region where we're buying.
Right. Now, will you eat the grape itself?
No.
Can you taste the difference at the grape level?
The only time I usually chew in on grapes is when we're buying wine. You'll sort of chew on a grape, and you want to check the seed. If the seed is toasty and not green, it can be all the sugar you want, and it says, okay, the sugar says it's ready. But sometimes that seed inside, if it's green still when you chew on it, you want something that's more, toasty and crunchy and,
older.
Yeah, you don't want that green taste in the seed. That makes sense. Like,
does the seed go in, or does that indicate then that it's still going to continue to ripen after
that seed during fermentation would give off some tannins that would be more green like that? Where you don't want that.
Okay, so it's in the process. It's not like an olive where you're popping the seeds out.
Yeah, when you're pressing it a little bit, yeah.
Now you mentioned press, and obviously you know what the stereotype is.
Yeah.
Now, maybe in the old days, but how is the pressing process? If somebody has never seen that before, what is their reaction when they see how it's done versus perhaps what folklore says?
Well, we used to have a basket press, which was like, like an old crank, and now we don't, thank God. Now we have a press that does probably about 2 tons at a time. And it's just a bladder press. It just goes around and air hits it and turns it.
2 tons sounds like it's one of those big gravel delivery trucks.
Yeah, it's
is that about
a 4x4 micro bend. So that's four. Four of those.
So like 2 cords of wood.
Yeah.
Ish.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not quite as overwhelming.
Yeah,
so you got 2 tons at a time, or do you?
We put all in this in the basket that turns it, and we just set the button and watch.
Sit back and applaud.
Yeah.
That you're not having to do anything by hand.
Yeah. Our programs are set pretty much. We know how long they're going to take. You don't want to press. Going back to the same thing. If you press it too hard, you're going to start pressing those tannins out of those seeds, so it can make boom. It just compacts it pretty darn good.
What happens with the leftover?
The leftover, I take it out to Ferndale to my brother-in-law, and his organic cows love it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's got to be like a mush, huh?
Yeah, it's all like dried, like Wheaties or.
Oh, really? It gets that dehydrated?
Yeah.
Hey, maybe there's a secondary market for that.
Yeah.
Maybe cow feed.
Happy cows.
Yeah. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Meet Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Jim Pastore from Old Growth Cellars. Jimmy, we talked a lot about the barrels themselves. Mm-hmm. When we see pictures or if somebody's been down to the shop, you see them lying sideways instead of upright.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just a more efficient way to stack them? Because, you know, they're not in a bottle yet, so
I think they've figured out this on the sideways. For once, you have the bung on top, and then they can be stacked easier. For us, moving them, you know, they have their racks, too. So I think that somehow someone was smarter than me and figured it out. Why it didn't work that other way. Yeah.
So it's not just tradition.
Like I said, somebody figured it out. It works.
Yeah. No need to upset that apple cart, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Corks have been something that have been intriguing for a lot of folks. You know, you got the real cork wood, and you got the plastic,
synthetic,
and then you got that thing that's in between.
Yeah,
looks like a cork, but you know it's not wood.
Yeah,
how do you determine cork? Is that just purely the market and how expensive it is?
Well, cork, good cork is very expensive. There's a shortage of cork right now. All of our whites, we went to a twist off. So, for one thing, it's a cleaner. Restaurants seem to really enjoy it more. And they say that 80% of all wine purchased is consumed within a day.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Even with the reds?
Yeah.
That's surprising.
And Australia does all screw tops with their reds. And it's something we've thought about. I know a couple of wineries that do it. Why would you... Would Budweiser let 5% of their beer be corked? So, I guess cork is sort of a stigma where people feel it, you know. And they're getting better and better with the screw top. So that's something we've looked at. But corks are a shortage right now. And
or maybe use the cork for one
of the
types rather than
of
varietals. Yeah, it just, tradition, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would suspect the same thing with the bottle.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not the most efficient shape to have a wide bottom and a skinny top, right? You just kind of compress it and make it a little skinnier, and now you got 24 in a case instead of 12. Same amount of juice inside, but there's that. Where do you get bottles? Are bottles challenging?
Bottles this year are okay, but next year they're going to go up about a third.
Really?
Yeah, I was down picking up some barrels, and I brought some bottles back for Moonstone, because we all try to work together around here. And they were almost double the price from last year when I brought them back.
Wow. Yeah. Glass shortage, or is this part of
glass shortage?
That stuff off Long Beach and L.A.?
And there's a glass shortage. We bought, usually it's, we got our glass this year from Chile, usually it's China. I think we got from Chile this year.
So there really aren't too many glass manufacturers in America?
No.
Is there a reason why certain bottles are shaped the way they are? Is it the way that the liquid pours out? Or?
No, there were certain bottles that I just tell you what varietal you're drinking.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they'll give you an idea of what varietal you're drinking. like, you know, a
peanut. So you really mess up some people that are in the know.
Yeah.
If you had the wrong bottle.
Yeah, people look for a certain Pinot bottle or a Bordeaux or, you know, yeah.
Now, somebody had said, God, what was his name? Stein. He was in Arcata for maybe a decade. Oh, man, he was on, regular on the show. About the concave at the base.
Yeah.
That was
a
sign of a what?
It's called a punt.
Like football punt?
No, underneath how it goes smaller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can pour it by just kind of pinching the bottom.
Yeah.
That was kind of the sign of a high-end wine.
Yeah.
Are those bottles more expensive?
Yes, they are.
Okay. So as a percentage, it might still be there.
Yeah,
but
they're usually a little thicker, a little more density.
Just easier to grab or less wine inside?
No, same. I don't, like I said, that's a history lesson we'll both have to look
at. Volume's the same. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Labels are another thing
that
are intriguing, I think, because a lot of people, I guess, either buy by the look. You know, how pretty it is, the label.
That's your first thing on the shelf is how do you catch somebody's eye? You know, it's sort of interesting to say that because I always look and I'll go follow the big boys. What's like Rodney Strong? What's Mondavi? And ours is a little different. We like our label, but you look at those labels, they're usually white, simple, and they just,
they pop out.
Yeah. Where ours, you know, the tree rings represents here very well in our county, but if we go somewhere else, how does...
Yeah, it looks like, you know, maybe...
My thumbprint.
Yeah, thumbprint or a cinnamon roll gone wrong.
And I haven't been arrested yet.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's better than putting a mugshot on there.
Yeah.
Which may have been suggested by some of your buddies.
Yeah.
Oh. So the distribution of the product, you make it, you got it, okay, you guys... Do a little direct business, but shelf space.
Yeah.
Now, you see it in the liquor stores. You see it in the grocery stores. You see it, not so much so in the large, you know, the Costcos and the large guys. Also, is that something that is an ongoing process? Is to get shelf facings?
Yeah, locally, we've been blessed to have great people support our wine here locally, and we haven't had no issues. You know, we're supported pretty well here. I mean, thank you, small businesses of Eureka and Humboldt County. Yeah, we've been supported a lot. So is there always an issue? Yeah, when you go to deal with restaurants, they only can have so many wines. They can't carry everybody.
That's what I was wondering. Then you move into the restaurants,
so,
and you've got some folks that are...
Yeah.
You know, they can't have an unlimited space.
Yeah, so, you know, you're hoping that your wine's got a good name, it sells. We feel like we put out a good product, and we try to take care of those people that take care of us.
When you run out of one type, one variety.
Yeah.
Then what?
Then
you just suck it up until the
then,
next cycle?
Then, yeah, you hope that restaurant takes another kind before they fill it with somebody else's.
Well, how do you choose what varietals you go with? Okay, let's say we're starting over, and you go, okay, I want to have six reds, and I want to have four whites.
Yeah.
And maybe a rosé in the middle.
Yeah.
Okay, now what? How do you choose from that point?
Well, when we first started, I was looking around, and nobody was doing Petite Syrah, and I found a Petite Syrah from Rosenblum, which was back then was really one of the number one selling wines, I felt. And they were using this Petite to blend, and I started tasting it, and I said, well, hell, let's make a varietal out of it. And that sort of put us on the market. And like I said, I would taste some wines and finds out ones I really like and buy a lot of them, and then I'd make some contacts and go get those grapes.
So you weren't wearing your chemistry lab coat
no.
in the back room doing all the
no.
litmus tests and
no.
find out what was in there?
No, I was drinking other people's wine and seeing how I can get those grapes.
Yeah, no, I I think there might have been justification in there somewhere looking for. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:44.
Hey folks, flying local is buying local. And with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Jimmy Pastore. Okay, bud. Thanksgiving tomorrow.
Yeah.
Your top four wines for a turkey Thanksgiving, because I believe that's the only real Thanksgiving celebration that can exist.
Top four wines.
Well, top four wines.
Let's go with a red, probably a Old Growth Cellars Pinot.
Okay.
And the other red would probably be that we just bottled this year. It's a new varietal for me. Would be our Barbera. And
yeah, we had last year because you hadn't pressed the OG this year.
And the OG is always
pretty
our number one seller, and it's drinking well too. And that would be two. Well, I'll say three then. Let's go with the OG.
Okay.
White, I would think, if you're doing want some white meat or something, Sauvignon Blanc or Chardonnay.
There's not that much dark meat on a turkey, but
that's true.
I don't know what kind of turkeys you've been eating.
I know.
Yeah.
And we are open today.
Oh, okay.
And tomorrow.
I was going to ask you,
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we're open. We extend our hours for Wednesdays now. It's through the holidays, through Christmas. So we'll be open to Wednesday through Sunday. I think during the week it's 1 to 8, and on Sunday 12 to 6.
How much wine tasting is there? I know there are people that will go tours and do that. That's kind of what they do on their vacation.
Yeah, I think people are looking for something. You know, COVID's sort of winding down a little bit, and we're finding more and more people are coming in tasting.
Is it tasting or is it hanging out with some wine available?
A little of both.
Okay. I mean, that one I can get,
We just had our wine pickup last Saturday. Went very well, and people were out coming, going, and you could just see it's fun to see everybody out there just enjoying themselves. And
being people again.
Yeah. And see a lot of smiles on people's face. Yeah.
Okay. Now, you've been doing it, 10 years-ish?
1999 we started.
Okay.
20.
Are any of those bottles still around?
There are some in my cellar. I have one.
Have you tried one just to see what?
Yeah, they're still drinking good. I've been drinking. I got some stuff.
Cellar, wait a minute. Yeah. There's no basements in Humboldt County.
Well, it's a tightly...
Technical cellar.
Tightly alarmed room. So I got stuff back in 2002 to all the way through. I've kept.
Enough so that you can try a little and try.
Yeah.
Is there much difference?
Some of it's holding up, but it's sort of cool to see, what we've changed in our yeast or what things we've done and see how they're holding up, and they've been doing well.
Now, that would be an interesting tasting.
Yeah.
Shot glass size, so you could try.
That might be an event, Brian.
Tickets available shortly.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff, I think, is fun because you can look back.
Yeah.
And you can see what the progression was.
Yeah, it's cool to do that.
Yeah. And hopefully you got enough where you'll be able to continue that for a while.
I try to put 3 cases of everything we do away every year, so.
That's not that much.
Well,
if you have more than 2 or 3 friends.
Yeah, but when you have over, I'm running out of room.
It just means you need to have a bigger
cellar. That's right.
Yeah.
And we are going to have a Christmas tree this year. So we're going to have a Christmas tree down there. We're going to try to...
Up on top of the building?
No, it's going to be in the building.
Inside the building,
too. We're going to try to do our version of a little Eureka Inn Love Fest.
Trains?
No trains, just barrels. We'll put them on tracks.
Great. A bunch of empty bottles on the tree. That sounds like after the party. Thanks for coming by, bud. Happy Thanksgiving.
All right.
See everybody tomorrow.